This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
I'm Wong Xiaoning, and this is the Breakfast Grill. Now, the oil and gas industry has had its share of up and downs, but it's a crisis now unprecedented, and who will be left standing when the dust settles? Questions we ask today of one of Malaysia's largest integrated oil and gas service providers, Sapura Energy, with none other than their CEO, Tan Sri Syahril Shamsuddin. Thank you for joining us on the line today. I want to start with the elephant in the room, oil prices. Now, we saw WTI dip into negative territory last month to recover, but we are still a long way from the $60 per barrel prices that we saw at the beginning of the year. So what is your view on oil prices?
I'm very sure that it is not going to go back to $60 in the next couple of years. I think it's going to be consistently low oil price for another 2 years at least before there is a rebalancing of supply and demand. So I think oil prices probably will hover between what it is now and $35, maybe even $40. Towards the end of 18 months from now. This is something that we need to accept because there's a dual shock. In fact, there's a triple shock. There is a demand shock, there is a supply shock, and then there is the COVID shock. This needs to work its way through. I think we need to adapt to this new normal. The consumption of hydrocarbons will continue to increase as lockdowns get lifted all over the world, but this will be on a gradual basis. So you will see transportation demand come up in the next 12 to 18 months. All other energy requirements will also start to increase, and then we will see a normalcy on the demand side. I guess on the supply side, we have to see how the big suppliers, OPEC, OPEC Plus, the US, come to some level of sanity on how much hydrocarbons, oil or gas, they are going to pump out of the ground. And once this rebalancing happens, we will see normalcy again. But to say that it's going to get to 60 anytime soon, I don't think so.
So, Tan Sri, is the glory days of oil long gone?
I would say not. It is not. I think the exuberant days are long gone, but oil and gas will still be 40% of the global demand by 2040. So it is still a very, very robust demand. In fact, towards 2040, there is a requirement to replace at least 40% of the natural depletion that will be occurring between now and then. So because there is natural depletion of the wells, you will need to replace that in terms of supply. So there will still be capital expenditure by the oil and gas majors. And even more importantly, by national oil companies, which needs to replenish their reserves that have been depleted, because that's a major source of income for a lot of countries that produces oil. I think Malaysia is one, and many of the other OPEC countries depend on oil, so they need to replenish that supply. Therefore, there will be capital expenditure. Muted it may be, as I said, for the next 3 years or so, but it will come.
But the issue with ultra-low oil prices is that your clients, right, all the oil majors, be it Petronas, Petrobras, Sinopec, or even Shell, are pursuing aggressive spending cuts. Now, I looked at some of their first quarter results, and on average, I think they are, you know, guiding 30% cut in their CapEx plans. So are you worried about your order book? Because on paper, I would say it's a nice number, 13.5 billion ringgit. But for sure, some of your clients must be asking for deferments at best or at worst terminating. So what is the situation for you?
I'm happy to say that we are still bidding for about $6 billion worth of work globally. I think I have to underscore this point, you know, Sapura Energy does work all over the world because we have diversified our area globally. the total opportunities for us is very high. And that is that $6 billion US dollars worth of new bids that we are doing this year.
Yeah, won't there be pricing pressure because everyone is going to be so mindful of cost of production, right, when oil is, you know, at historical low prices?
Exactly. And that it's why you see what we do what we do. We've gone in and said, hey, let's say our turnover drops by 30%. Then everything else of our cost must drop 50% for us to maintain a healthy margin. Yeah?
Yeah, but that's going back to your...
That's why you see the aggressive cost cutting that we have.
I'm going to come back to that aggressive cost cutting, but that $13.5 billion order book of yours, how secure is it? Have you had clients come and say, okay, I need the deferment, I need a termination?
There are some deferments in there, but mostly about a year, 6 months to a year. But some are not deferred, yeah? Projects that have been out there that we've been bidding... we have the chance of winning. So for every deferral, there's also a backup of projects that we win.
Tantri, how impacted have you been by COVID-19? Because in your fourth quarter, you did provide an impairment of $438 million in additional COVID-19 provisions on projects that may face the disruption. What projects are these? And is this the last of it in terms
of... It is not just... Yeah, because there is project deferment, cost runs, yeah, and there's no revenue. So the net effect is you don't make a profit. And as a company, we have been very, very careful with our people. We kept the people on the payroll. So that cost never went away. We still needed to make sure that the equipments are working. I mean, it's not total shutdown everywhere. We were still working. We were still drilling. It's just that there were parts of the businesses where projects were deferred and costs were already incurred. Therefore, those losses are there. And we needed to be prudent. So in order to be prudent, we take out the potential losses there are that would come about this.
And what steps have you taken to ensure the safety of your workers actually during this COVID-19 era?
I think as a company, we have been very quick. In fact, we shut down our yard almost immediately. And we kept our people on the payroll. We ensured that our business continuity program was intact. In fact, we had almost seamless operations from our systems and our IT system, our information system, to be able to manage our businesses from home.
But are operations back to normal already?
Even today, we're still not letting people go to work completely. We have a 50-50 program where only 50% of the people go into work and the other 50%, and we do it every 2 weeks. So there is no, the offices are not full with people, yeah? And there is testing. We have rapid test being done in the lobby and temperature taken. We're doing the same thing in the yard. For the yard and the vessels, we actually start quarantining our people 2 weeks before they go on board. We test them, and then we want them to self-police themselves. And then before they get on board, we test them again. And we have test kits on board. We continue testing. We have protocols in the canteen and in areas where people congregate, where we limit the number. But even then, we have had cases of COVID in our rigs and our vessels where they are airlifted out. And then we go in a even more aggressive protocol to ensure that it doesn't spread within the vessels itself.
And earlier on, you mentioned cost cutting. I think there was an announcement even before your quarterly results where you came out to say there'll be salary pay cuts and even job losses after Ramadan, you know. So what kind of cost savings are you expecting and who will actually be impacted?
Quite significant cost savings. Senior management like myself are taking a 50% pay cut until things go to normalcy. It's a voluntary pay cut. And then we have a sliding scale of 5 to 45% throughout the organization. But we have put very, very strong emphasis not to impact people that are below 10,000. So basically, we are taking costs out to be in preparation of very competitive environment going forward by not impacting the lower income and readjusting ourselves to the new normal in this industry, where I think there is a need not only just to bring down cost of full-time employment, but also craft, also looking at our system to be more effective and efficient, a much more stringent capital management to make sure there is good cash flow in order to weather the next 2 to 3 years.
And kudos for leadership, by example, for having a 50% pay cut for yourself. But if I look at the annual report, your total package for 2019 was 12 million. And I mean, let's be honest, even before that in 2018, it was 71 million. So even if you, yes, share pain for everybody, but you would say that maybe you feel it less than the rest of your staff. And in the past, salary has been a point of contention, right? I mean, even EPF voiced their objections to it.
I'm glad you asked that question, because I think I need to clear the air here. My remuneration in 2000 and what was it, 17, yeah?
Yes, 2018 and also 2017. I mean, 2018 was 71 million and 2017 was 84 million ringgit.
Yeah, it was tied to very, very specific KPIs. And I bring you to the period between 2012 to 2015. The company was making 1.5 billion, and that remuneration was actually not my yearly remuneration. It is my long-term incentive plan, where they had, by criterias, by KPIs, awarded me those. It was granted and then paid over 3 years. So that it was a combination of previous years' bonuses. My remuneration per year is benchmarked by the board. So it was the board that awarded it, and that's the end of the story. So when times are bad, there is no profit, everything comes down.
But even if, let's assuming there's no profit, which is, I think, the case. I mean, last year, 2019, your total package was 12 million. So half of that is still at least 6 million.
There was still deferred payments of previous years' long-term incentive plans.
Point is that, yes, you feel some pain, but, you know, it's your remuneration is still quite generous compared to the average employee out there.
Maybe you would say generous, as it is benchmarked towards international pay scales, yeah? If you were to convert that to US dollars, if you had an expat that is sitting in my chair, I think the question wouldn't even arise. Yeah, because he's an expat, therefore he should be paid that much. But when a local guy that runs a international company, there's a lot of noise. Why is that?
You're listening to The Breakfast Grill, where I'm speaking to Tan Sri Sharul Shamsuddin, CEO of Sapura Energy. Up next, cash is king, even in the oil and gas industry. BFM 89.9.
You are listening to The BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Breakfast Grill, where I'm speaking to Tan Sri Sharul Shamsuddin, CEO of Sapura Energy. Just a moment ago, we were talking about oil prices and how that impacts the all-important order book. Now, Tan Sri, I want to pivot to the financials, because FY20 significantly missed forecasts. And I'm not looking even at the one-offs, just the core losses at the engineering and construction division. I saw razor-thin margins and losses at the JVs. Would you say you bid for these contracts at the previous oil price downturn, which of course maybe now in hindsight was too low?
It's the dynamics of the industry. Yeah? I think you need to look at all our peers in order to come to a conclusion why this phenomenon exists. It is consistent with the industry in many ways, because when we started bidding, we were in 2016-17. Then we get it awarded and then it is executed in 18-19. Yes, at that price, you are right. The cost was lower. And then we had an increase in demand and increase in the activities. And then we went in and then there was rising of cost and that narrowed the margins. Yeah. So this is why some of those projects ran into losses. And I would say there was also some projects, yeah, there are some projects which are still making money. Because there are four or five projects, so happened it ended in that year, so we have to take the losses. But any one time, we have 61 projects running. Yeah? So all over the world. And because of this, we have to look at the portfolio. Unfortunately, we got caught at that time because that's the reporting time, and we reported a loss. And there are also areas where we need to optimize to adjust to this new normal.
But what about the eye-watering provisions of 3.7 billion for impairments and provisions? I mean, clearly it's a kitchen sinking exercise, which I would say is prudent. But are you confident that this is the last of it, especially if, let's say, the industry continues to deteriorate and oil prices continue to perhaps even drop?
Okay. Remember I said it's going to take 24 months to normalize?
Yes.
So because of this, the accountants have a methodology of valuing goodwill. And they feel that because of the attenuated turnover that's expected from low oil prices, the accountants will say, hey, because of this, you need to do impairment on your goodwill. So it is a fixed formula that is used and a call that's made by external accountants to bring down the goodwill. So you may call it kitchen sinking, but there's a technical process that you go through in order to take the goodwill off the books.
And let's look at your cash, because in this at this current juncture, cash seems to be king. And if I look at the numbers, you ended FY 2020 with a negative earnings EBITDA of 322 million, while cash has shrunk to just 700 million ringgit and not much free cash flow. So, you know, what is the pressure here? And is that why I see in the press you are saying that you are looking at refinancing your 10 billion debt?
Good question. If you remember, we used to have 19 billion debt, right?
Yes, once upon a time.
And then now we have 10 billion debt. So really, the refinancing exercise started 2 years ago. It has nothing to do with the COVID. It has nothing to do with the low oil prices. It was a strategic effort to bring down our debt so that it is at as low level as possible. Yeah. So this process that we're going through is part of the process that started last year when we raised the equity of 4 billion. And we did the divestment of our oil and gas operations for another 4 billion. Yeah. So that's brought down our debt. So the next level is actually to refinance the rest, plus some other ways of bringing down the debt, yeah? But what is important to note here is when we financed the company 8 years ago, we were supposed to refinance 3.5 billion ringgit, US dollars, sorry, this year. Actually, we are ahead of the curve. We only have to finance 2.5 billion. We're actually ahead by 1 billion. So I just needed to put it into context, yeah? And you also need to look at our net tangible assets per share. Our NTA today is still about a dollar. So these are assets that are available for further gearing in the company.
But Tan Sri, is it going to be a challenge to refinance in this environment? And you've got to deal with 14 financial institutions. Or are you banking on the fact that you're too big to fail?
No, never. Again, when we do something, we don't do it by shooting from the hips. If you look at the growth in the areas that we are in, EPCI, drilling, and also... we are in development to drilling, yeah, which is different from the others. Our gas reserves and subsea, we are still getting bids. There is still work. There is still a financial model which we can present to the banks, yeah, that looks very, very viable. So it is about continuing the business. It's not about, I think, as you put it, too big to fail. I think this is not what Sapura is about. We've been around for 40 years. We've never, ever not honored our debt. And I don't intend to be doing that on my watch. So that, I think, banks can be reassured. The other thing is, it is difficult. I will not say that it is not difficult. We are in an environment right now where not just our industry is impacted by the COVID, by low oil prices. Every single industry out there is going to have to refinance in one form or another. So by extension, it will be more difficult. But does not mean that we cannot do it, because we are already more than three quarters of the way in completing our refinancing. As for the challenges of managing our relationship banks, I think they know us. They've known us for a long time. As I said earlier, these are relationship banks. They have seen. There are banks that have financed oil and gas companies for decades. So they understand the dynamics that goes on. But I hope that answers your question.
Yes, but Tan Sri, what about a cash call? Is that something you want to consider? Or is it too soon after the 4 billion ringgit rights issue raised in 2019? And maybe something that PNB, your major shareholder, may not have appetite for in this market?
It all goes back to fundamentals of the business, yeah? A cash call or a bank debt, it's a function of a viable business. If the business is viable, either a cash call or bank debt can do the work. So right now we are focusing on refinancing. That was the plan anyway, 8 years ago, to refinance this year. And that's what we're going to do. But, you know, you cannot discount any possibilities because times are tough. Banks are tougher. So let's see what happens. But we are very confident that our business model stands on its own. It depends on the risk appetite of the banks now, on the sector itself.
On that note, thank you for your time today to share what plans Sapura Energy has to overcome this double whammy of COVID-19 and low oil prices. That was the CEO, Tan Sri Sharul Shamsuddin, joining me on The Breakfast Grill. I am Wong Shaoning, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.